Good morning, Maxine Crump.
Good morning.
Well, tell us what happened a little over a year ago when you learned about this development in 1838. How did it occur?
I got a phone call. Someone left a message saying they had some information about my ancestors and I might be interested. And when I called them back and got them, they said one of the names that I seem to have been associated with had been enslaved in Maryland. And they named Hawkins, which is my grandmother's last name. And but the name Cornelius Hawkins, which was also a name that I was familiar with, but I did not know of a Cornelius Hawkins. So I knew that this was legitimate, and especially as we talked and got more of the information.
But this was Georgetown University, one of the great universities in America, a Catholic university, Jesuit, the alma mater of President Clinton. You wouldn't think that a university of this caliber would have been involved at any time in something like this, but it was. What's been the response from the school?
The school, like the Catholic Church, both are very, very old, entrenched organizations. And they have been kind and pleasant, and they've done some things that to them, to be such an old entrenched organization and so established, for them may be a lot. They have issued apologies, and they have named one of the buildings on campus for my fourth removed great-grandfather. His name was the first name on the enslaved manifesto. And his name was Isaac Hawkins.
So you had multiple relatives.
Yes. From Isaac to his son Patrick and Patrick's children and wife and Cornelius, who was the youngest, who was not the youngest, but one of the youngest of the children. He was 13 at the time that he was brought over.
How many slaves are involved in this, Maxine?
Well, 272, but that came to the actual plantation that they were brought to was 94.
And that was where?
That was at the West Oak Plantation in Marenguin.
Well, Georgetown, as we know, is in the heart of the nation's capital. How was that university involved in slave trading in Louisiana?
Because the governor of Louisiana negotiated with them for this large sale. It's supposedly the largest sale of enslaved people in the history of America.
When you were provided this information, was it a shock?
Oh, my whole body just started making room to receive this. It was like every fiber of my being had to move aside to make space for a question that I had held for a long time. How do we get to Marenguin? And I would have never, and anything I could have imagined or made up, thought of that as my heritage.
And how have the others responded? I suspect you've gotten acquainted with some people that you did not know before.
Oh, yes, so many, thousands.
So the others, are they offended greatly? Or are they relieved? What is the general consensus, if there is one?
Yeah, you're right. There isn't a general one. There are so many experiences, but mostly people like to know their heritage, so they're having that. I would say if that's a general one, it's like, oh, great to know that we now can find ancestors that many African Americans in America would not or have not and probably will never be able to find.
Now, an apology is fine, but some would say that's far short of what is necessary in this case. Do you have any concept of what you believe is the appropriate remedy, if there is a such thing in this kind of a tortured past by a great university?
In addition to an apology, they have also afforded legacy status to all the descendants, which means that we have the same opportunity to go to Georgetown as the alum and those who are professors there, for example.
So you could enroll in Georgetown right now?
I could.
Have you thought about it?
I thought about it, yes. But I haven't.
and you've got a career behind you rather than in front. So,
right.
but that is a great school. It is one opportunity, but some monetary reward would seem to be appropriate. And there is a legal team, and I would imagine there is some discussion about that.
There's not a legal team associated with we have formed a GU 272 association for descendants. And we do not have a legal team. That is not our approach at this time. What we would like is to form a foundation, and that some of the things that we would ask of Georgetown and the Jesuits would work through the foundation. And if the foundation is funded through the support of Georgetown and the Jesuits, then we believe that that would be a reasonable reparation. The amount we're asking for is $1 billion. And that would... that would afford us to give straight out scholarships to descendants instead of just legacy status and then them having to negotiate for money.
Billion with a B?
Yes.
Okay. But the Advocate headline of March 23rd reads, Georgetown slave descendants bring in legal team to help negotiate with university on reparations.
Yes, because there is a group that is doing that and they are descendants, but that's not the group I'm with.
Okay. But are you all in some way or another joined together on this?
No.
No?
No, it's very likely that it depends on how Georgetown decides to do it. As I relate to the administrators and leaders at Georgetown that I've met, they're not likely to negotiate with one group mm-hmm. for a suit and not include everyone else. But at this, as far as I know, we're not a part of that.
272 slaves are involved in this. And how many, again, went to Maraguyn?
94.
94. And some were relatives of Maxine Crump. And I would imagine you probably think about your father and how he would have responded to this. How do you think he would have?
I do, and it's hard for me to think about how he would think about it. I really have trouble coming up with how he would respond to it.
Do you think he would have been outraged, or would he have said this really is no surprise?
Oh, no, he would have been surprised, without a doubt.
Yeah, as were you.
Yes,
all
yes.
These years later.
Yes.
We're talking, 180 years later.
Right, that's right. He had outrage about slavery and racism. He wouldn't have had any new outrage. That's mm-hmm. what I think.
But you must think about how you would certainly not be Maxine Crump, if this had not occurred. Which
and you're right. I have. I've thought of so many things like that, and you're absolutely right. That has shaped who I am, and I'm not one of those people who regret anything about my past. You know, life is dynamic, and what you're dealt. And so I don't have any questions about that being my heritage.
What did the apology entail? Was it a full-throated apology?
It was. It was the strongest apology I've ever heard in the history of America. It was genuine. It owned its wrong. Many of the apologies sound gracious and almost to say, well, we're sorry you feel that way type of apology. But these were, we were wrong. Mm-hmm. There is nothing that we can do and justify this in the name of an organization that's Jesuit, Jesus, to say it's okay. Mm-hmm. It came from the Jesuits and was very, very strong, powerful apology.
Are you a Roman Catholic?
Yes.
So this hits you on a few other levels too.
Yes. All of those who were enslaved by the Jesuits were Catholic. And that was how we were able to have last names, because the Catholics kept the names of the slaves and of those who were enslaved and kept the families together for the most part in while there. And part of the sale was an agreement that they would continue to be able to practice their religion when they came to Louisiana.
This was a surprising development that the New York Times reported just over a year ago. Now, when these slaves were sold, was it like at auction? Was that the way it worked at that time?
I don't know exactly how that was. No, I know it was not auctions, because they were all loaded onto a boat at the same time. So the governor, Johnson, negotiated with the president of Georgetown for the sale, and it was a sale of the whole 272 enslaved people that they had at their White Marsh plantation.
And this was a couple of decades before the Civil War. It was an interesting time in America, but of course they would have been in Louisiana during the Civil War.
Yes.
This is something that today I'm sure that many of us have a hard time getting our hearts and minds wrapped around, but this was certainly a common procedure in those times.
It was a legal business. America created slavery as a system to build its economy.
And this is not so far removed from the present when you think about
it's
the generation.
It's not so far removed. But people think it is, because what people aren't taught in school, they think isn't quite real. And it isn't taught in school that slavery was the system that America chose to build its economy.
Are the remnants of those times still with us?
Absolutely. Totally. I run the Dialogue on Race Louisiana organization, and the reason I designed the Dialogue on Race series is to talk about the structures of that system that still exists today and to help educate people so they can understand when they're looking at racism.
Well, old habits die hard, and I've been to some of your presentations, and I think the general idea is that sometimes there is institutional racism that we may not even recognize.
That's exactly right. And so you call it habits. It is an actual system that was structured over a couple of hundred years that America put its... it was the only place that slavery existed in the world. People love to tell you that slavery was all over the world. But this was the one place where America said those people aren't quite human. So it became a stigma of the nature of those who were enslaved that weren't quite of the same species. And therefore, people are still fighting for that. America was founded as a white nation. And so that's the fight today, that people are fighting to keep America the white nation for those that America said were superior. And so many of the ways our whole institutional structure is laid out around the fact that whites are the preferred citizens of America.
And okay, is white privilege alive and well in the city we reside in today?
If you have racism, you've got white privilege, because racism is to protect white privilege. Racism is to assure that whites continue to have full access and full status as Americans.
And blacks do not.
And blacks and other people who are not white do not.
Okay. Let's bring your backstory into this. You were enrolled at LSU. I think you were the first African-American female to reside in a dormitory, right?
Right, that's right.
And we've talked before, but that experience is a few years behind us now. But have things really changed on the campus of Louisiana State University, as far as you know?
Well, I think LSU would definitely say yes, and it has in that way, but it still has a racist structure that it hasn't dismantled. It has tried to make things better, just as many other institutions do. They try to make things better, but better doesn't mean you've eliminated the structure that supports that. So the foundational and structural way that most institutions operate, LSU no exception, are perpetuating the problem. If you have certain basic things in place that continues to operate the way it did, it's going to continue to favor the original foundational structure.
I see some of my progressive friends upset about the Charlottesville massacre, but tragedy. I wouldn't call it a massacre, but it was a tragedy. And they're posting things on Facebook, but yet we're in a community where our flagship university still has a largely segregated Greek system. Mm-hmm. It was as segregated in 1977 when I enrolled 40 years ago as it is right now.
And the Greek system is where the majority of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies come from. So the university is feeding the leaders of the country. All universities, not just LSU, but LSU too. And they need to be aware of that. And that segregated Greek system says a lot.
But it's uncomfortable to talk about that for some people who are fully comfortable talking about what happened in Charlottesville near the University of Virginia.
Well, they need to know how uncomfortable it is to live in segregated America or racist America.
Well, what's going to spur people to have the courage to speak out if you believe that is what is necessary?
Education. I think people don't know that this is a racist structure that's built. I think people keep thinking it's people who are mean and hateful. I think they think that white nationalists, KKK, Nazis, and those groups that were in Charlottesville, I think they think those are the racists and the rest of us are not. And that they are reacting to America's promise that it was a country for white people. And they believe that was the right way, they believe that was their promise, and they're fighting for it.
What do you make of what happened in Charlottesville?
That people who are out there fighting, and as David Duke said, it was the promise that the president gave them that he was going to take our country back. I guess he meant their country, not mine, back for them. And so whether he meant that or not, that's how they took it.
Mike in Plaquemine. Mike, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Maxine Crump.
Hey, Ms. Maxine. How y'all doing?
Hi.
You know, the sad thing about this whole thing with Charlottesville is to look at the young white men out there, and that tells me one thing, that they have passed that nasty racism down to the next generation. We thought it was going to be over with the older white people. But no, this thing has been passed down like a disease. And that's sad, man. You can just see the racism in people's faces since Donald Trump has been exposed. Thank y'all.
Do you share that belief?
I think it's the common narrative out there that those are the racists and that is racism. That is a reaction to racism. That is what racism spawns.
Well, it's a case in which it's kind of an unusual revolution, if you will, with these guys in polo shirts. But still, there were many of them, and up to no good, some carrying Nazi flags. But is that really reflective of the majority in America, the majority race?
I think the majority race thinks that those are the people that are the problem. The people that are the biggest problem are those who can't see that the structure that continues to remain in place, that has large tracts of land preferred by white people that have been there for generations because the ownership of land was held back to those mm-hmm. who were African Americans. My great-great-grandfather, Austin Hawkins, had nearly 100 acres of land stolen from him because he couldn't read, and he couldn't read because he was not allowed to go to school. So when you talk about that, that to me is racism.
Susan in Burbank's on Burbank. Susan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, Jim. I would just like to thank Maxine for everything she has taught me through Dialogue on Race. I'm so grateful that I attended a Dialogue on Race session, in fact, three of them, and this helped to open my eyes to the history I wasn't taught. I had never heard the term white privilege before, but now I understand totally what it is and how I've benefited from it. Thank you, Maxine, for everything you do in our community.
Hi, Susan. You're welcome. I recognize who you are.
Well, Susan.
Yes, I learned a lot, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling, Susan, and sharing your story.
You're welcome.
For those who are interested in Dialogue on Race, what's the best way to find out more, Maxine?
Dialogue on Race, Louisiana, the website, or the Facebook page.
Okay, Dialogue Race on
Dialogue
Race.
Dialogue on Race, Louisiana.
Okay, very good. Well, we are going to spend a few more minutes with Maxine Crump, who is a true pioneer. You were the first African-American reporter in Baton Rouge on television, weren't you?
No, I was the first at Channel 9. Channel 2 had a reporter before, had a reporter of color.
And that was? Was it Ed Buggs?
No, it was...
Wasn't Kip Holden, was it?
Kip, no.
Well, we'll save that for the next one. One more call, JC, for Maxine Crump, Stewart in South Baton Rouge. Stewart, good morning. You're on the air with Maxine.
Maxine and Jim, good morning.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, Maxine, I just want to piggyback what the last caller, Susan, shared, how wonderful your work has been.
Stephen, I recognize
and a question to you, Maxine, is has the police department ever considered working with Dialogue on Race, or have they already done so?
The police department has had its first Dialogue on Race series with its cadets earlier this year. And in addition, Ascension Parish Sheriff Jeff Wiley brought the Dialogue on Race program to his group. We started the first one for them this summer, and we have another one scheduled to begin in the fall.
Do you want to take one more? Okay. All right. JC tells me that we have a few people waiting, but we're going to try to get to another call before we go to Jeff Rodell, the incomparable talent who many remember as the editor of 225 and is now producing music, and we'll hear Fight the Flood shortly as well. But Maxine Crump is retired as a journalist in a way, but really it's kind of like saying somebody's retired from the rings. You'll always be a journalist, won't you?
That's right.
Okay. Last call for Maxine is Owusu from Baker. Good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, good morning, Jim and Maxine. I'm so glad that you're on, Maxine, enlightening folks. But could you say a word about Georgetown not being unique in that many of the Ivy League colleges and others supported slavery, had slaves, had slave auctions on their campuses? And also, the point in terms of Charlottesville, that's just the tip of the iceberg. A lot of the Republicans who are now speaking out against white supremacy have historically supported legislation that was very harmful to the black community in terms of mass incarcerations.
I love what you just said, because that's exactly right. There are those who are now boldly speaking out against white supremacists. But I also came from the era where they boldly spoke out against the Ku Klux Klan. But those same people went right on to continue institutional practices that has perpetuated racism. And the same thing can happen today if they think that they're solving racism by denouncing these groups. That will not solve racism. It will just quiet it down so everyone can go back to practicing the same structure that they don't recognize perpetuates these divides.
Thanks for what you do, Maxine Crump.